Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 179 for January 18th, 2013. Corvette C7 Heaven. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Well, here we are on the floor of the North American International Auto Show in Detroit with the auto extremist himself, Mr. Peter DeLorenzo.
Good to see you.
And Todd Lassa.
Hello, John.
Who I dare not introduce as being with Motor Trend, but not with Car and Driver.
Not with Car and Driver either.
No, not with that either. Automobile. Well, I was going to go through the list and I was going to get it right at one point. No, I'm just teasing you, Todd.
There weren't too many of those left, yeah.
So, what a week, man. What an auto show. Peter, highlights for you or a highlight for you?
That was boring. No, obviously the Corvette.
And we'll get to that later in the show.
Yeah. The ELR production version.
Yeah.
The Hyundai Z2834ZGL, whatever it's called.
You forgot the hyphen in there.
Yeah, the hyphen. And a Lincoln MKC.
Right.
What about you guys? What did you?
Yeah, Todd. What did you
that
pick up?
Covers it. I think the Volkswagen. What do they call that? Blue Sport. I'm
cross,
like
blue.
Cross, blue.
Yeah,
blue
that
cross,
that was one of
cross.
That was one of my answers.
Cross
to
blue.
The, that was one of my answers to the question that nobody was asking at the show. So
I think yeah. It's probably the most significant vehicle here. I mean, I'm not. The styling's only okay. It's a big
SUV.
SUV. It looks like it's got a lot of space. It looks very close to a production vehicle. It's got a lot of production hardware in the concept, and I think it's going to be very important for Volkswagen, and could have a real effect on the industry.
Well, one thing that I found interesting about it, Volkswagen says this is the first concept vehicle they've ever done designed specifically for the U.S. market. And you can see some Grand Cherokee in there. You can see some Ford Explorer in there. You know, so they're not taking any chances. They're going for some of the two best-selling vehicles in the segment and copying them.
I thought it was boring as hell.
It is boring as hell. It's kind of boxy and squared off, but that means it's going to have some pretty good interior space. And I think that's kind of a significant thing going on here. My dark horse choice for a car to watch is, believe it or not, the Toyota Furia concept. That is the future Toyota Corolla. And why I think that's important is that you have to look at the DLO, the daylight opening, and look at the way the belt line does not kick up the way all the competitors are trying with midsize and compact sedans to make them look sporty. Give it up. They're not going to be sporty ever. Same with family-style sport utility like the Volkswagen Passat-based SUV. This car is going to have a good interior space to exterior size relationship, just kind of like the new Honda Accord versus the Chevy Malibu or the Ford Fusion, for example.
I like that Corolla concept.
I thought it was pretty good, too. And again, this continues Toyota's march to come out with cars with much more dramatic styling. I mean, the Corolla's been about as plain Jane as you can possibly get. This Furia concept really shows that they ain't going to go that way.
Well, and it's all in the side surfacing, John. If you look at the roof line is a very kind of traditional kind of Corolla sedan roof line. It kind of harkens back to the 70s and 80s even, with a fairly upright and tall. And again, that big expansive greenhouse to make the interior space feel nice and airy and low cowl and easy to drive, that sort of thing.
There's a little bit in the front end of it to me to one of the European Honda Civics, too. It, you know, the nose drops down right down by the grill and the headlamps, and there's some Honda-ishness to it there for me.
True, but if you peel away some of the concept-y-ness of that nose, you see that the new Toyota Avalon is the new face of the Toyota front-drive sedans from Avalon down to Corolla and probably the next K Camry as well.
Speaking of Honda, too, they came out with a concept SUV. I don't know why they call it SUV. It's really a crossover. You know, I guess it's going to fit between the Fit and the CRV.
Yeah. I thought it was very good.
I agree, Peter.
A Fit-based crossover.
And again, you know, just as I was saying about Toyota, Honda's getting its mojo together when it comes to styling. You know, they're getting their act together.
I'm going to have to disagree on this one. I thought it was way overwrought. I thought the character line that sweeps up from the front to the back, trying to make it look like it's longer than it is. It's a B-class CUV. It's a Fit-based CUV. Don't try to make it look big. The Fit is a rather neat-looking little car, one of Honda's best-looking cars these days.
Oh, I'll tend to disagree with you there.
Okay,
I love the way the Fit drives. I think it's a terrific package, but I don't know. To me, it's...
I should say the first Fit was a better-looking car.
Well, the first Fit probably was a better-looking car, but to me, whether the first one or the one they got now, it looks a little dated to my eye.
I thought the side surfacing and the rear panel on the Honda... crossover didn't look very good. I thought it was too much.
Uh-huh.
Didn't know when to lift the pen.
Acura showed the NSX again. That's 2 years in a row. Then they're going to show it 2 more years before it comes out. It's 2015. They shouldn't have brought it back this year. They should have showed it last year, be done with it. You know, let us build up interest again. No, they show it again. They really didn't have any story. They said, well, it's more production-like.
And I don't think they needed to show it.
No, they don't.
No, they have other cars out there.
Yeah.
The RLX, right, is pretty new for anybody coming to the show. And what's the other one that they had?
MDX concept
was out there. So, yeah, why trot out the NSX now?
Well, in the same vein, Ford brings out the next generation F-150 concept, the Atlas. Very cool, great reveal, but why? It's in market 24 months from now. But I know why, because, they just have to... You know, they can't come to the corral without a gun, you know? With the other, you know, with GM introduced their trucks, Ram's truck of the year, so Ford...
Had to do something.
Anticipated that and trotted out the Atlas, which is cool, but why now?
Why tip your hand so much?
And I hope they don't...
About that. I think it was all Alan Mulally. I think Mulally, in his penultimate, if not his ultimate year at Ford Motor Company, was looking at how this is the first... This is the most exuberant show since the Great Recession, since those dark days of 08, 09, and 10. And he saw that that General Motors was going to have the big splash with the ELR, with the Corvette, and, of course, the trucks. And the trucks were pretty much downplayed after the Corvette and ELR here. And I think he decided he had to have something more than a couple of vans to show at what's one of the brightest Detroit shows in many, many years.
See, I have a somewhat different take on it. I think Ford couldn't stand to see Chevrolet come out with the all-new Silverado and GMC with the Sierra and get all this media coverage. No, they had to come out with the Atlas, and damn if it didn't get much more coverage than Chevy did with the Silverado.
Well, look at the Silverado. I mean, yes, it's improved inside and out, but...
Tell me that's the new one, because I can't tell.
It doesn't look new.
No, it doesn't.
You know, yeah, I think, John, you're exactly right. So Ford showed that, don't even think about, you know, messing with our throne here.
But you see what they're both doing. They took both their half-ton trucks and kind of beefed them up with their current heavy-duty truck styling. So this is what's been going on the last few generations. You make the half-ton truck look like the heavy-duty truck, and then the next heavy-duty truck has to get even bigger and more ridiculous. A huge grill with a bigger badge and everything. So
that is a big grill. I'm saying it's the biggest grill on a truck this side of a Peterbilt.
Yeah. Or this side of a Super Duty.
Yeah.
So
did they leak out much information about the truck? Is this an aluminum frame, aluminum cab? Do we know anything about it?
They didn't say much. They hinted on much lighter, better fuel efficiency. So they're going to lightweight components.
Well, maybe, but they better not have too much aluminum in there if they want to eat into their margin on that truck. After all, Ford has pointed out that it's selling more cars these days, and they have nowhere near the margin of the F-150 or the rest of the F-Series.
Right, but, you know, they're only doing it for fuel economy reasons, and the law says thou shalt do so.
They also spoke about next generation EcoBoost engine on that truck, whatever that means.
Whatever that means, yeah. Right, yeah. Maybe a four-cylinder?
Maybe cylinder shutoff.
Oh, okay.
Something like that, I don't know.
Well, sticking with Ford, so it's to speak, Lincoln MKC, Peter, you raised that earlier.
I think it's very nice. You know, actually, that MKC might do more in terms of volume than the Z. I think it's aimed right at a particular segment of the market that's red hot, as we know. And I think the MKC has a lot of potential. So, but it's a year away.
It's a year away. I love the proportions on
the
vehicle.
Oh, yeah, it's very nice.
I love the stance on the vehicle. It's a very handsome little crossover.
It's nicely rendered, that's for sure.
And, you know, to your point, that's a red hot segment. Nobody dominates it right now. It's whoever comes out with the new one. So, you know, it'd be up against what, the BMW X1, the Audi Q3, those kinds?
Actually, the X3, I think, because this is a Escape size, so it's Escape-based.
Okay.
So it's basically up against the Q5 and the BMW X3. I think the Q5 would probably dominate if Audi could bring enough of them in to meet demand. But
It's a red-hot segment. Nobody's really dominating it, even though Audi might be in the lead right now. It's got better margins than the MKZ segment offers. So I think it's a smart place for them to get into.
Oh, they have to get into that place, and they need more product. But the product is still all Ford-based. Still a problem for Lincoln.
Yeah, and speaking of Audi, they showed the SQ5, which is nice, 354 horsepower. And Porsche is going to probably be in Detroit with the Macan next year, which has started out as a Audi Q5, but apparently, from what I'm hearing, it's sensational and dynamically sensational. So we'll see. But that segment is everybody's in. So.
And what do you guys make of some of the high-end makes here that we haven't seen in a while? Ferrari, Maserati.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Ferrari video of that FF abomination being driven through the foothills and the mountains like it was a Jeep was awe-inspiring. It was like, what are you doing? But beyond that, I love the F12 Berlinetta. Beautiful, 700 horsepower. What's not to like?
Those, how do they describe them? The scoop built into the bodywork. I'm seeing that as a new trend. You look at the Acura NSX concept, and you're seeing them in the C-pillars. You look at the BMW i8, the extended range hybrid, and they've got those kind of cove cowl in the C-pillar as well. I think there were maybe one or two other places on the floor where you find that look. That's maybe the next thing in sports car aerodynamics.
Well, and as we'll get into later in the show, Corvette's doing some really interesting things with air intake and extraction for aerodynamic reasons.
So BMW 4 Series as well.
Right. Yeah. I like the look of the 4 Series.
I did, too. I really did. I thought it was nicely done. I mean, when we first heard about it, it was just like, they're renaming the 3 Series Coupe. But it's different enough. It's wider.
It's big.
Yeah, it's big. And I liked it. I thought it showed very well.
You know, getting back to the cross blue Volkswagen, I don't want to necessarily get back to that, but the thing is that Volkswagen's really focusing in on crossovers. I mean, they think that's what Americans want. They want to be a bigger player in the American market. I think we're going to see a string of crossovers coming from them.
Well, they're kind of right. That appears to be what Americans want.
I thought it was interesting that Scott Keogh said that Audi is responsible for 50% of the Volkswagen Group's profit.
Wow.
That makes sense.
I knew it was a lot. I did not know it was 50%.
Well, they brought the RS7 here, which is awesome. But remember, it started out as a lowly A6. And then, you know, I wrote a column about this. Then they build it up to whatever, 115,000. The profit has to be huge in that car. Yeah. And they're just masters at it.
They are masters at it.
Yeah. And they just...
That's why they make 50% of the profit.
That's how they're surviving in Europe.
Yeah.
Audi and Mercedes are the only two brands that were up last year, and Audi's got all the margin in it. The Volkswagen's sales are... They're still at the top of the sales heap, but sales have fallen in Europe. and they have no margin on Volkswagens.
And as John is quick to point out, they have more employees by, what, a third than any other?
Well, they have 550,000 people working at Volkswagen Group, which is, you know, as I keep pointing out, almost the same as GM and Ford and Fiat and Chrysler all put together. So, but they've cracked the code of how to make that work like nobody else has.
And I actually think they're just on the verge of really pouring it on with this new frame architecture they've developed.
The platform strategy, yeah. MQB, for example, which
right.
can be stretched and widened and shortened and blah, blah, blah.
The modular approach.
Everything from future, from the new Golf, which we won't get for another, what, year and a half or 2 years or something, but that's already out in Europe. That'll work up to the next full-size, I mean, American-size Passat. And I don't know how much of that is in the sport utility, but probably a little bit at least.
Any news that you guys picked up on besides the cars? Any good dirt?
Besides Audi making all that money?
Right.
Well, I won't comment on what Sergio said. You can read it in the website.
Okay.
I was at the round table, so it was all public, and he spoke about Alfa Romeo and not wanting to bring it here until it's ready. And, of course, I've reported about how this new smaller rear-drive platform for a SRT Barracuda replacement for the Challenger will underpin a smaller, kind of a compact or mid-size Alfa Romeo rear-drive sedan as well. And I asked him when the replacement for the Challenger would be coming, and he just said soon. That's all he would say. He's also talking about the 9-speed automatic that will launch with the Jeep Liberty that's coming to the New York Auto Show, and how he wishes he had had that ready for the high fuel mileage Dodge Dart.
One thing that I found interesting is the only really big news that Chrysler had is a refresh of the Jeep Grand Cherokee, which is what, 2 years in the market, a little over 2 years in the market, and yet they're already refreshing it. I found that very interesting, and I wonder if that's going to trigger now this frenzy where you can't leave a car unchanged for 4 years, yet now you're going to have to start doing refreshing every 2 years or so.
Well, once upon a time, Mark Royce promised me that this C7 Corvette would not be in market as long as the C6 was. So everyone's waiting for the C8. They're already looking at their watches. I think we'll see a new Corvette in 5 years.
5 years.
That would be right. I think that would be good. And the other thing I wanted to point out on the Grand Cherokee is not only have they refreshed it two and a half years into its cycle, the grille's smaller.
Yeah.
You know, here we've been at an auto show or auto shows for the last decade just watching grilles get bigger and bigger and bolder and bolder, and now they've gone with a smaller one, and I'm wondering, is this where the whole thing flips and now grills start to go smaller again?
Let's hope they start that with wheels, because they've gotten too big and heavy. The two things about the refresh on the Grand Cherokee. First of all, I think you could probably credit Mullally and company for starting that at Ford a few years ago and turning what were going to be minor refreshes into major refreshes. At Ford, a company that was known for letting a car go to seed way too long. Secondly, the Grand Cherokee has been a huge moneymaker for Jeep and for Chrysler. That has been, after the Ram pickup truck, the best seller at Chrysler many months, often trading places with the Jeep Wrangler and
another high-margin vehicle, right?
Yeah.
Let's face it, without Jeeps and trucks, I mean, that's where Fiat Chrysler's making their money. I mean, there's no question. They're not making money on Fiat 500s.
No.
I'm sorry, all your Fiat fans out there. Those are just like spillage. They're making money on trucks and Jeeps. And, you know, the Italians are smart enough to know that. Hopefully they won't mess that up. And GM, where are they making their money? Trucks. They can build all the Sonics they want. They're not making jack on them. And the same with Ford. Where's Ford making their money? Trucks.
Hey,
look. Sounds like something we'd say 10 years ago, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's a formula that hasn't changed. Look, this is why Toyota came out with the Tundra, you know? This is why Nissan jumped into it. So there's a lot of money to be made still on the truck side.
Still.
Hey, look, let's hang up this conversation right now. We're going to have to unplug our mics. Let's go over to the new Corvette. We got Harlan Charles there. He's the product and marketing manager for the car. And I think we're going to get a chance here to learn a whole lot more about the Vette. So I want to give a shout out to all our sponsors for the show right now as we start to make the transition.
We are IAC Group, a global tier one supplier of vehicle interior solutions that span the rapid, ever-changing needs of today's industry. From interior design and engineering to manufacturing and delivery, IAC, our heritage, your advantage.
The first and most important step toward accomplishing something is showing up. And with the most advanced all-wheel drive system in its class, that adapts to conditions as they change. Now all you have to worry about is what you accomplish when you get there.
ITC operates, builds, and maintains the electric transmission infrastructure. We are working hard to improve electric reliability and increase electric transmission capacity throughout our operations across the Midwest. ITC, we're your energy superhighway.
We'll get back to our special webcast from the North American International Auto Show in a moment. But first, remember, if you didn't catch it live, you can still watch all of AutoLine's exclusive Detroit Auto Show coverage at AutoLine.tv. Hear from guests such as Peter Schreyer, a newly appointed president of the Hyundai-Kia Motor Group, and the VP of Global Cadillac, Bob Ferguson. Tag along with John McElroy as he walks the show floor with analysts, experts, and automotive decision makers. And be sure to check out our special editions of AutoLine Daily direct from the center of the action in downtown Detroit. Click over to AutoLine.tv to catch all this and much, much more. Now, back to our live webcast from NAIAS.
And now we're in the Corvette display. We've got Harlan Charles here, and you're the product and marketing manager for this car. I'm so envious, man. This has got to be a blast for you to be working on.
Oh, yeah, I got the best job in the world. You think about 60 years, this is only the seventh time we've had an all-new Corvette. And actually, today is the actual, January 17th, is actual 60th anniversary.
1953.
At the 1953 right now, Motorama, today.
Yep, today.
So we nailed the date, man.
We nailed the date, and actually, our chief engineer was in New York at the red version, joined with the real Motorama car owned by Kerbeck. George Kerbeck Chevrolet in Atlantic City. He owns that car.
And then you're auctioning off a Corvette at Barrett Jackson, right?
That's right. We're auctioning off the rights for number one, 2014 VIN number one, and once they can order whatever specs they spec it out however they want.
What do you think it's going to go for at auction?
Oh.
Any guesses?
I don't know. Our 2013 427 convertible went for $600,000. I don't know if we'll get that close.
I think it'll go for $750,000 easily.
That would be awesome. And it's going for a Center of Creative Studies for charity.
Oh, that's a lot of money for CCS to get.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But yeah, so that's a big story, to do that on the 60th anniversary. And of course, this is an all-new 2014 Corvette Stingray. We brought back, one of our crown jewels, something we're very emotional about, the name Stingray, to this car. And we really wanted to do something that was a total... Not a total departure, but every part in the car is new. Every part, but actually all but two parts are all new on this car. But we wanted it to, when you see it, we wanted people to say, that's the new Corvette. Everything about it says Corvette, yet everything about it is new at the same time.
I thought this was only going to be a refresh, and you're saying everything is new on it. And yet the basic dimensions of the car, the hard points are still pretty much the same, aren't they?
Yeah, the hard points are pretty close. We actually have an inch longer wheelbase. We put the front wheels forward. That helps the weight distribution. Really right at 50-50. One of the things we learned, in 2010 we came out with the Corvette Grand Sport, which had the more aggressive look, the wider track, the more racing influence. And we put that in, the Stingray. We put that kind of more aggressive look. So we had a little bit, sort of the wider track. And actually the car's about a half an inch lower than the previous car. And the overall length is pretty much, it's the same as a Porsche 911, basically, overall length.
And you also...
lean heavily on Corvette racing to develop some of the aero for the car. Right?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, one of the things I really want people to realize when they look at this car, all these fans, features on this car, everything is derived from what we learned from C6R racing, and everything is functional. For example, the front hood vent up here, that actually helps, we have a forward tilt radiator that helps release the hot air that normally would have got trapped underneath the car, release that out, so it really helps reduce the lift of the car and helps at high speed.
You're venting the radiator, what do you call it? The air going through the radiator, part of it actually comes out the top of the car.
We're giving it an escape route. And then on the quarter panel.
Let's go back to this, because this is one of the coolest parts of the car, I think.
And you see this on the C6R race car, and anything about it is when we do the next race car, it'll already be in the production car. But we have one for the transmission cooling and one for the axle cooling. You know, rear valve transmission.
And just for anybody listening to the podcast right now, these are vents on the top of the rear fenders of the vehicle.
Right, vents on the rear top. So the main thing is that everything on this car is functional. That's kind of the challenge about doing a Corvette. It's got to be beautiful. You want it to say Corvette, evoke Corvette, people see it. But then it's got to be a great race car. We want to continue our winning at Le Mans, ALMS Manufacturers Champions, and, you know, that racing to street technology, working with Pratt and Miller and Doug Feehan's race team is really important going into this car. This car, actually, the drag coefficient is superior. What we had to do, the challenge is, we wanted the drag coefficient to be superior than the outgoing standard Corvette coupe, which is the narrower track, while having better lift. Actually, this car has better lift value.
Less lift.
Less lift. Thank you. Less lift than the Corvette ZR1. And to get that both combination together is really a neat thing that we were able to do.
That's really a trick, being able to get the coefficient of drag down and yet also reduce the lift on the vehicle.
Right, because a lot of people talk about, you know, do you care about fuel economy? But a lot of things we do to improve performance actually does help fuel economy as well. Now, the new car, we have a standard aluminum frame, you know, and this is the first time we've done an aluminum frame that's open air. So we also have a standard removable roof panel. And the neat thing about this roof panel, you know, is it's carbon fiber. So we've done carbon fiber roofs before, and it's great. It helps the weight, obviously. It's in the higher point. It helps the center of gravity. But the nice thing about it in everyday use, when you remove and store the roof, it's very easy for one person to do. It was easy before, but even now, you know, with the lighter roof panel. And actually, we're going to offer this, I think this is the first time anybody's done this visible clear-coated carbon with the body color outside rails. It's kind of a unique look. And you can also get a full painted body color. And we have the transparent roof as well. We continue that. So you have a carbon fiber roof. We have carbon fiber hood, standard on all the Corvettes. Again, aluminum frame. So one of the things we're doing is taking the high-end exotic car technology and bringing it to the Corvette Stingray, which will be our standard Corvette.
Well, let's not go away from these fender vents, because what I find intriguing is you've got cooling. What'd you say? It's the differential and what?
Yeah, the transmission and the differential.
Which is right off the race car.
Right off the race car. But what I like is you're getting less weight, because by having them be cooled at the rear, you're not running plumbing from the front of the car to the rear to cool them.
That's right. Exactly. You get less plumbing. And then a lot of people wonder, you know, the new design, beautiful, you know, with the quarter windows and a different hatch shape, was really was a lot of that was to enable to cut around so you'd have the fixed. Because otherwise, if it was like the previous car, you would have the vent, you know, you'd have all that complexity of that working together. So we...
Harlan, let me ask you about the weight, because these days engineers take all kinds of weight out of cars. They try to lighter materials, more high-strength steel, in your case, carbon fiber. And then with all the new equipment that you need to put in it, you end up with kind of a wash. Where are you on weight versus the C6?
Well, that's a great question. We're to be honest, we're still working on that trade-off. We know we have the frame, which saves about 100 pounds, the aluminum frame versus the steel frame, the carbon fiber, and we have a new hybrid nano composite, which is basically, you know, chopped up carbon fiber in the conventional composites and some of the other panels. That saves around 38 pounds or so. But to your point, the other side, we have bigger brakes, we've got bigger wheels, we've added a lot to the interior, 8-way power seats, standard power steering column. And one of the things we really had to do, we'll talk about the engine, but we have active fuel management, which allows the Corvette to run in certain conditions in four-cylinder mode to get four-cylinder fuel economy. But because of the front engine rear transmission, in order to avoid, you know, vibrations, we did have to add some stiffening structure to the tunnel. So that'll come back there. So I don't want to oversell. We're going to take all this weight's going to be out. We are going to have some weight back in. So we'll see how that comes out as we go along. So we're still working, making some final choices here. So I don't have a number, but we're working hard to make this the lightest, best sports car we can make, obviously.
And we've all heard the numbers for the last several weeks, but bears repeating what kind of horsepower and torque you're expecting from the 6.2.
Right. Do 6.2, LT1 engine, get variable valve timing, direct injection, active fuel management. We're estimating right now 450 horsepower, 450 foot-pounds of torque. And anything about the torque, if you lay that torque curve over the old 7-liter, I shouldn't say old, but previous year, 7th-liter, 427 engine, the torque curves are pretty close. Right? The torque really comes in low. So the horsepower numbers we get excited about, but the torque in your everyday driving is really... You really appreciate that. Now, one of the things we should talk about, too, this car, this is a cyber gray car. This is the Kalahari interior. A lot of people have seen, you know, from the launch, the Torch red car, you know, with the black wheels. And one of the things we really wanted to show with this new Corvette was the bandwidth that Corvette can have, because, you know, the Torch red car, black wheels, it's got a very track-oriented, very aggressive look. We have the red car up on the wall there. But in this car, is a little bit different for Corvette. The cyber gray, we call it Kalahari interior. We want to do more of a luxury GT type of theme, where it's kind of like your personal, you know, private jet for the road. You know, that's really, a lot of the sports car market is really, you know, different types of people. Some people are all about racing and getting to the ultimate performance. One of the things we want to do, we want to put that racing technology in, but also improve the premium aspect of the Corvette. So people who may not have thought about Corvette in the past will look at the exterior, interior, the refinement of the surfaces, and really think, you know, this is something I might now want to at least take a look at.
It really works for me. I love this color combination. I love it even better than the red car. And, you know, sports car should be red kind of a thing. No, not in this case. I love this gray one. But I'm not giving up on these side vents yet on the fenders, because I want to go to the very back of the car. And this is what intrigued me. You're exhausting the air that goes into these side coolers out in the rear of the car, just outside of the tail lamps. And that's got to be one of the other things that's helped you get a low coefficient of drag and yet have less lift on the car at the same time.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Exactly right. And that was part of the reason, you know, this new tail lamp idea in the housing, to integrate all that with the vent as well. And then we have the diffuser underneath, which are all going to be painted the black metallic carbon flash. And the tail lamps, you know, LEDs, you know. And I think what a lot of people haven't really noticed, who've just seen photos or maybe some of the unofficial diagrams and sketches we've seen all over the internet, is really the 3D aspect that these have. They're not like your traditional 2D shape. So one of the things we wanted to do was, we heard from, again, some of the people that may not have considered Corvette, that they're all the same because the back has always been the same. You know, they kind of don't see the difference. So we wanted to keep the signature Corvette, you know, the four digits, but the way it's my own thing. I kind of say, like, we took the circles and pulled them inside out, you know, to really give it a distinctive look.
The new shape has created some controversy, though, hasn't it? What's the take so far? How do you think the reaction's been, pro or con?
Well, I would divide the reaction from people who, you know, have seen the car in real life, has been extremely positive, versus people who just seen some of the diagrams. You know, there is the family resemblance to Chevrolet, and that goes back. You know, Camaro had round tail lamps years ago, and the Corvette had round. So we do want to have, although this is the most extreme Chevrolet, we're proud of, you know, to have some family resemblance there. But I think overall the whole car has been very well received. Bringing back the Stingray character, and the Stingray name, I think, has been also, especially with our enthusiasts, very well received. We actually had, at the unveiling, we had 180 members of the National Corvette Museum, and actually they paid, you know, to contribute to the charity of the museum, $1,200 a person to be there. We opened up those seats, and you could hardly tell the difference between them and a lot of the media and other guests that were there, the excitement that we had. So we do obviously want to appeal to our core enthusiast audience that loves Corvette, but anytime you do a newer Corvette, especially this one, now is a really opportunity for us to maybe get some new people to take a look at Corvette that maybe consider other sports cars, or maybe that haven't even thought about a sports car, you know, to be on the market.
Well, let's swing around and look at the interior. Yes. And maybe even pop the hood on this thing.
Sure.
Let's talk about the
interior.
Yeah, as long as we're right by the
right
door here.
Traditionally, the weakest point of Corvette.
Well, one of the things we really wanted to do was, everybody always agrees that the exterior of Corvettes have been exciting over the years, but you could pick any year. We wanted to take that excitement and bring it into the interior. And above all else, we wanted to have the best materials available. So if you see something that looks like carbon fiber, it really is carbon fiber. If you see something that's aluminum, that looks like aluminum, it's real aluminum. Of course, real leather. So we wanted to do that, and then also we did our own steering wheel, unique to Corvette, 360-millimeter steering wheel, smallest we've done, really give you the sports car look, very compact airbag within that. And we have two 8-inch HD displays. We have one, obviously, and you're used to seeing it, navigation, and we have one for the gauge cluster. And how we do that is integrated. Now, you see the knob behind the 7-speed shifter. That's we call that the driver mode selector. And a lot of cars have a lot of customization of the cars. You can vary the steering, you can vary the suspension, the transmission shift points. What we want to do is, you know, when you're in a sports car, you don't have time to go through a lot of menus and everything. We wanted to make it so it's easy for people to customize the car very quickly to whatever driving condition they want. So we have weather, eco, tour, sport, and track. So you can really set the car how you want. And it also, in addition to, you know, the mechanical attributes that it changes in the car, it actually changes your cluster display. So say you're in the tour mode, you know, you're driving to work or on vacation, you can get your navigation information in the gauge area. You can get your album art for iPod, trip information like that. You move it to sport, we emulated the classic Corvette analog tach that the purists are going to love in the sport mode. And then in the track mode, we emulated what they use in the C6R, the hockey stick tach. They have lap timers in there, two-dimensional, you know, friction circle, G-meters. So you can really not only change the way the car behaves, it changes some of the visual aspects of the car well. And, you know, I'm really proud of that because it shows how we were able to work in a team across powertrain, across chassis, interior, electronics, to get a common switch that really would work with all these different attributes together. The exhaust sound is different, all that kind of stuff. The other thing I mentioned briefly, we have a 7-speed manual. It's our new standard transmission. And it has active rev match. And some people are asking, how come you have paddles with a manual transmission? It's kind of unusual. But those paddles are there to quickly turn the feature on and off. It's really a neat feature because we're all different levels of proficiency with manuals. I know all of us are excellent at it, but there's people there that, you know, the heel toe shifting, you can take a lifetime to really try to perfect that. So what we've done, it basically automates that, upshifts and downshifts, so you get the perfect, you know, heel toe shift, things like that. And it's really useful for either people that maybe aren't comfortable doing that, you can just drive like a champ, or even for a really proficient driver, if you're on a track for the first time, it's just less mental workload. You can learn by the line, learn everything about the track, and then later you can go back, hit the paddle, and go back to full, you know, your full control. So that's something we're very excited about. And then forward of that is something I'm kind of proud of. This little plaque, it says Corvette Stingray on it. That's you know, most of the cars will come like that. But if you special order your car, you can personalize it, get your name on there in the VIN, build for, or if you do the Corvette Museum delivery. You know, so that's an area that we can customize and make the car more personal, you know, personalization, obviously, in that. And we have The screen, actually the center screen, has a power button that drops down, and there's a storage cube behind that with a USB port. So that's a great place to put like an iPod or a phone. You can put in there, and it locks with the car, you know, so you can listen to your music. And they have storage in the center, obviously, and electronic glove box. So there's no keys, really. The only key is really for emergency. Everything is keyless now, even this personal storage.
And you have an optional sports seat, don't you?
Yes, thanks. This is actually we call this the GT seat. This will be the standard level seat. And we made this seat, we did increase the support of the seat from today, but we wanted something that's good for a lot of different people and it'll be comfortable for long distances and things like that. But we know from the capability, this is a 1G car, so we hear that a lot. You know, what are you guys going to do about the seats for the serious track driver? So in the, I don't know if they can get it, but the red interior back there, if we wanted to walk over, it's up to you, but that has the new competition sports seat and has the carbon fiber inserted, so that is more of a true, you know, track seat, a lot more support, snug. Obviously a little bit snug, not for everybody, but I think opening it up to two different options really allows the car to be more personalized. That's the new adrenaline red interior that we have, and you see things like As you go up in the trim levels of the Corvette, we have more leather wrap. That is actually a leather wrapped interior. All the red there, you see the color is all real leather. And we're even doing things like you can get suede wrapped upper interior trim. You know, so even though the Corvette, you know, we always talk about Corvette bang for the buck, you know, good for the value, it gets the performance, you need a lot more than a lot more expensive cars. We really want to do a sports car that even if you can afford any sports car in the world, this might be the sports car that you would choose. No excuses, no reason why we can't put this car up against the best in the world.
Let's pop the hood on this thing just to give everybody a look at what it looks like under there. So it looks to me like the design group spent some time under the hood, not just doing the surface of the vehicle. That's beautifully packaged in there.
Yeah, thank you. It's a LT1. And one of the things you'll notice, you can see the forward tilt radiator, and that's actually why we have to do the 90-degree bend for the air intake. That's really what helps us reduce the lift of the car. So we really prioritize that. And some of the other things you may notice, no power steering pump. We have a full electric power steering at variable ratio. And that enables us to really tune that. We talked about the driver mode, how that can tune that. And also allows us to rid of some unwanted vibrations that could come in the car. We can actually remove that through the use of the EPA electric power steering.
One of my sources inside GM tells me that with the direct injection, the variable timing in the cam and the E-Pass and all that, that this car is probably going to get better real-world fuel economy than what the EPA label says.
You know, it's funny because, you know, you don't think of fuel economy for the luxury sports car market, but you talk to a Corvette owner, one of the first things they'll tell you is, like, I can't believe the fuel economy that we're getting. And we do have a history of hearing from customers that overachieve. And I think, you know, this will be the same. And especially now that you have the active fuel management system. And that is one thing that it's really in control of the driver. You know, talking to customers, you know, people are, you know, I want the V8 all the time. Again, depending on what mode you're in, if you're in the, you know, the track mode or the sport mode, whatever, you have the V8 mode all the time. You put it in the eco mode, then you get the... So the driver still remains in control of that, even though all you have to do is hit the accelerator and it'll change. But, you know, when you're cruising around 70 miles in at 65, whatever...
Who's going to go 65 in a Corvette Stingray?
Alleyways.
Alleyways.
But yeah, so it is a really a demonstration of our technology that we can have a car with this type of capability and get 0-60 under 4 seconds, 1G, and have, you know, the outgoing Corvette is 26 miles per gallon highway. We haven't gone through all our testing, but we hope to really do a lot better than that with it.
The outgoing may be 26, but I know a lot of people who tell me they get a consistent 30 miles to the gallon, at least at a steady 70 miles an hour.
Definitely. I've heard the same thing as well. Now, some of the other things we have, I guess we didn't talk about, we have Brembo brakes all around, four-piston, fixed caliper, which is new. We have Michelin Pilot Sport Cup, Super Sport, tires all around now. And we have the standard Corvette has 18 inches wheels in front, 19s in back. This is the Z51 performance package. It has 19s and 20s. And what you get with that package, it's not just the bigger wheels and tires. You get larger brakes with the slotted rotors. You get dry sump oil system, very important for track use. We actually moved the battery to the back on all Corvettes. Now you get different gear ratios, and of course you get a different chassis setup. Firmer Bilstein shocks, firmer bushings, and you can also get magnetic selective ride control, which we have a history being the first out with that in the 50th anniversary in 2003. So that's on this car as well. The new generation of magnetic selective ride control. So really, we wanted to have a car. Technology, you know, we have the best technology, and I really am proud of what Corvette Stingray, and what Corvette says, not just about Chevrolet and GM. I think we're kind of Team America. We represent the American auto industry and the Motor City, and I really am proud that we have a car that we can put up against the world class. You think about the segment we're in, mostly European cars, a few Japanese cars. It's really big egos at stake, best in the world, you know, and to be able to go over the Grand Prix like Le Mans and beat those guys on their soil, and hopefully we can do this with this car in the future. I think it means a lot to everybody in the auto industry, not just, you know, our team.
Well, let me ask, getting back to the power steering, the electric power steering is always a concern for enthusiasts, for us. Tell us why we shouldn't worry about the feel and the feedback of that steering.
You know, that's a great question. When we went into it, we would only do it if we didn't lose steering feel. And actually, I found it really makes the car, it's very direct, it's very precise, and a lot less vibrations and things like that. So if you're asking me to judge, I think it's really makes the car easy to position in the road, easy to position in the lane, and fun to drive. I think the stiffer structure, we got 57% stiffer structure in this car also, combined with that, it makes the car really a lot of fun to drive.
Well, look, maybe we ought to wrap up this part of the talk of the car and open it up to questions from the audience. So I'm not sure how we're going to handle this remotely, Ben, but let's go with rapid fire. Okay, here we go with rapid-fire questions. Come on over here, Harlan. A.M. Guerrero wants to know, did Chevrolet sacrifice some of the rear visibility on the C7 when they replaced the one-piece wraparound backlight of the previous Corvettes with a more conventional-looking design with C-pillars?
That's a fair question. It is a little bit of a trade-off because, obviously, you have pillars now. It's a little bit of a trade-off because you actually have pillars now, but we worked as hard as we could to make the quarter windows as large as possible. I think in your normal driving, you're not going to have any issues.
Okay, Scott in Cleveland wants to know, are all Corvettes now Stingrays, or is the Stingray simply a trim designation?
Yes, all Corvettes are Stingrays, which I really like. No more of this base Corvette stuff. It's Corvette Stingray from now on.
Cool. RMT1 says, can the A-pillars be painted body color and the middle of the roof section between the removable roof panel and hatch be black so it looks like a black band from windshield to hatch?
Can the A-pillars be painted? Well, I think they're talking about this carbon fiber look in the roof. Are they talking about changing the... Or they're talking about making it all black?
Maybe.
That's not an option we have at this time, I would say, or have considered, but you know what? Somebody's probably going to do it.
He also says, supercharging the Vette looks like a tight fit. Will Chevy go with a twin-turbo ZR1?
Well, I have to say it. Future products, can't really talk about it right now. I know people hate to hear that, but stay tuned. You know, it's all about the Corvette Stingray this year, but you know we're working on something.
Saw that coming.
We did.
Ray Schaffer says, any word on, well, this is also getting into to future product. He says, finally, is it just me or would it have been tongue-in-cheek fun to have Chevrolet include a 1984 retro LCD display option as one of the rotations for the new Stingray Dash?
You know what? That's a great idea. You know, that's something we actually brainstormed about, that now that we have this reconfigurable, you could bring back whatever year Corvette is your favorite with something we talked about. Right now, we have kind of the three modern themes, you know, the middle theme being the more traditional, but that's a neat idea with something we've talked about. Maybe we'll do that someday.
Okay, Peter, this one's for you. It's from Jay Cujo. He says, do you feel that the new C7 lives up to using the Stingray name?
No, I don't. You know, the Stingray is a hallowed nameplate in Corvette history, and I might have saved it for an upper-level version of this car, but I wouldn't have used it for the everyday car.
And here's one of Swivel Bucket who says, will the Vette be available in Europe with a diesel? I think that's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but I got to believe that you're looking at taking this Vette into the global markets far more than you ever did in the past.
Yeah, no diesel, but yes, this car will be available in Europe for sure, Japan, Middle East, and we're looking at expanding the Corvettes further. As Chevrolet has become more of a global brand, we now have the dealer ability to do that. So, yes, Corvette will be a global sports car.
Okay, here's some other questions about the show. Todd, I'll throw this one to you. Rum and Coke says, regarding the Ford Atlas, do we really need a bigger pickup? What about bringing back the Ranger or making a smaller F-100 for us normal-sized people?
Well, that's a great question, but, you know, if Ford does go all aluminum on that, then that might be a cost-worthy idea. Fact is, because they're body-on-frame, a smaller pickup is not going to get much better fuel mileage and won't cost Ford much less money to make, so why not offer the bigger ones in the States where that's what most people want?
And besides, I don't believe this Atlas is necessarily bigger, is it? It's just styled to look bigger.
It's a concept, and it's bigger than the current F-150, smaller than the Super Duty. That's what they say, but concepts often are scaled up or scaled down a little bit to throw off the competition.
Okay, Harlan, here's another one for you. Theo Gibson via Twitter wants to know, GM made wholesale improvements to the Gen 5 small block, 450 horsepower. Why does it fall short of Chrysler's 6.4 Hemi with 470 horsepower?
Oh, we're going to get into that horsepower game. Well, it's more than just horsepower. It's torque, it's power-to-weight ratio, things like that. So, and our 450 is just our estimated number for right now.
Oh, the truth is starting to come out now. It's only an estimated number. I love getting this. Okay, Chuck Grenchy wants to know, will Corvette offer monochromatic paint for the exterior body color? He says, what I'm getting at is that, to me, the vent accents are a little too over the top. Also not a fan of the black wheels.
Well, the black wheels are optional, so that's up to you. You know, you get silver, black, chrome. On the vents, one of the things it's a good point to bring up is that all the things you see vents, it's not molded in color. Everything is painted. You know, it's painted black metallic carbon flash. And we have talked about accessory ideas that, you know, go to different colors and think different accents and things like that. So it's a good idea.
Okay, let's go to some of the other questions here. George from Brooklyn wants to know, Peter, I'll give this one to you. Why the hell does Infiniti love the letter Q?
You know, that's what they entered this market with, and I think they're just trying to get back to where they belong or something like that. They're comfortable with Q. And let's just say Johan Dennison has his work cut out for him.
Yeah, he does. And I know he's trying to simplify things, so they're just going with Q. AAH Guest 909 says, and Todd, you're probably the one to answer this one. What kind of starters are used on cars with stop-start technology?
Oh, I'm probably not the one to answer that one.
I'm throwing it to you because I'm definitely not the one.
I'm not sure, but I think there might be a variety of them depending on the brand, and you know, some work better than others. Do you have any idea, Peter?
No, I don't.
My guess is with
Harlan.
Do you know Harlan? Okay. Right. I know on hybrids, you'll see integrated starter motors that are used for both propelling the car and for starting the engine once it's stopped. I believe the stop-start that we're starting to see go across the board right now are just heavy-duty regular starters. I don't think that they're packaging anything else on top of them, but we're going to have to find somebody else who really does have the answer to that. Let's see. Jay Cujo also wants to know about the Caddy ELR. Does this high-performance version using the Volt-Tec technology speak to the improved range of the Gen 2 Volt, or what it could be if they dialed back on the... I'm not sure I'm getting this question, but... Do you know anything about the LR and the performance?
I think it's basically the same powertrain as the Chevy Volt, but my understanding is that they've tuned it a little bit differently, so the range is a little bit shorter than the Chevy Volt, but it's a little bit better performance. They're claiming an 8.1 second 0 to 60, which I don't know, is about a second and a half or 2 seconds quicker than Chevy Volt. Not a performance vehicle, but a little bit more in line with what a Cadillac extended range would be.
Real good. Well, it looks like we've gotten through all the questions in rapid fire, so probably a good time to wrap up the show. But Harlan Charles, man, boy, you're a perfect presenter for this car. You know the stuff upside down and backwards, and I think we're going to have to grab you by the ankles and shake more information out of you at some point. But you're hinting there's more to come.
There's always more to come with Corvette. As you know, every year we're going to have something exciting to talk about. So I really, it's really been a great thing, time for me to be on your show. And really, thanks for having me so much.
Been our pleasure. Todd, always good to have you on the show, too. Thanks for coming out here to the Detroit Auto Show to do Autoline After Hours with me and Peter.
John, always my pleasure. I'm glad to do it. Glad to be here.
And Peter?
John?
It's been a good show, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Overall, I think people will be pleased when they come down here.
I do, too, and we should remind the audience that...
you only get a new Corvette every once in a while, so it's worth the trip.
You have to savor the moment.
Yeah.
Next week, we have a great guest in the studio, a guy named Mose Noland, who is one of the most brilliant engine builders that the Ford Motor Company has ever had. You can't believe what this guy's been involved with, so... People, thanks for having tuned in to Autoline After Hours here at the North American International Auto Show, and please join us again next week.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.